IVM.
Folks, welcome to Paisa Paisa. I'm your host Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter. And in today's episode, we're going to do something different. Yeah, once in a while, we do go off the track of credit cards and mutual funds and all that. So we're doing loans for budget private schools, which in a way is loans for affordable education. We'll tell you why this is important. My guest, Brajesh Mishra, co-founder and CEO of Vartana. And we'll talk about India's education, the bigger picture, and why loans for budget private schools, therefore for affordable education, are so important right after this short break. And welcome back. Okay, folks, a bit of background before I start the episode. At Paisa Paisa, every once in a while, you know, we do go off the beaten path of mutual funds, stocks, credit cards, banks, and we look at the bigger picture. Okay, so for example, in the past, we've covered financial inclusion, micro SIPs, pension solutions, banking in smaller towns and cities. All these episodes are there in our archives, of course, for Club Paisa Paisa members. It's completely accessible. So that's the first part, right? We like to cover topics that cover the bigger picture. And the second part is education loans for kids. Okay, we've done that with Eduvance back in June 2021, with Avance in December 2021. So these are pretty big loan providers. But today, we're going to talk about education loans for budget private schools. Now, you know, if you're wondering why you should even listen any further, well, I'll tell you why. First, affordable education. Okay, keep your ears fixed on that. Affordable education in India is facing serious problems, and we'll tell you why. Second, Vartana is a great example of how impact investing works at scale. These people are really big. Third, hey, who knows, you know, you, your friend is running a budget private school or is a teacher there. This episode is actually going to be very useful. Or, you know, if you know kids who go there, believe me, there's a lot that you can learn out here. So you want to really listen to this. And fourth, finally, if you're someone who wants to work in the education sector in India, well, this is literally, Vartana is literally a great place to work for. So I'm done with my intro. My guest will tell you why affordable education in India is critically important. I know that it is, because without education, our society and our country are going to be left way behind. That's it with my intro. Let me introduce our guest. Brajesh, welcome to Paisa Paisa. You've come all the way from Bangalore for this. So thank you so much for doing this for our listeners.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. So first up, tell us about Vartana, and you know, feel free to add numbers on size, scale, etc., whatever is relevant to you.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Anupam. So we are a 10-year-old company. We are a non-banking finance company registered with the Reserve Bank of India based in Bangalore. What we do is we provide loans to affordable private schools for adding infrastructure, additional classrooms, labs, toilets, etc. Anything to make the space better, safer for the kids. So we've been doing that for the last 10 years. Over the lifetime, I think we would have impacted more than 8,000 odd schools. The portfolio that we have, the loan book size today, is in the range of about 1,000 crores. So that's a lot of money that we have deployed. We are present in 35 branches in about 15 states. So it's almost like we're covering 70-80% of the addressable market. About 700 odd employees. A great place to work for the last 5 years. We've been certified as a great place to work for the last 5 years or so. Through these schools, we've been able to impact indirectly about 20 lakh kids.
2 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is the scale that we are talking about, where through the schools that we lend to, we've been able to impact such a large number of kids. So that's very satisfying. The other product that we have is a loan for student loan. The other product that we have is a student loan product. Here we're looking at only domestic. We don't do study abroad. We're looking at tertiary education. So somebody who wants to do a course, an upskilling course, a vocational course, or even a basic degree like BSc, BCom, we would be happy to fund that kid. So money should not be a problem in terms of, you know, getting to a better college. There it's been a recent start, and we have been able to finance close to about 10,000 students so far. So that, in a nutshell, is what about. It's about Vartana, an education-focused finance company.
I'm just 8,000 schools and 1,000 crore book. You've actually got a 1,000 crore book.
Yeah.
That's massive. And when you say that you've affected, you know, you've impacted, you've reached out to the lives of 20 lakh children, These aren't, you know, these children are the ones who actually need basic education, which the system does not deliver.
Yeah.
Can you just help us understand that problem? Because we know that there is an issue out there, and budget, so I want to do this in terms of what are budget private schools? what need do they satisfy? And it's a very unique proposition because it's between business and education. Okay, those are very, you know, dicey fields to mix up. So let's go into that.
Yeah. So conventional wisdom says that education is a public good and is the responsibility of the government. You go to any developed country, you will find that 99.9% of the kids go to government schools. Private schools are for the very, very elite class. It's not for the masses. However, in India, right from earlier times, even before independence, private schools were part of the landscape. They were probably introduced by the British. We don't know. Let's not get into the history. Yeah. But today, the reality is that affordable private schools are across all the income segments, right from the upper end to the lower income segments. And the way to define an affordable private school, the way we define it, can you imagine a school providing education in a fee range of, say, 10,000 rupees to 25,000 rupees per annum, right? So these are the schools where people send their kids to as an alternative to government schools. Mostly these are from the lower income and the lower middle income segments. So our maids, drivers, electricians, plumbers, these are the people who would be sending their kids to these schools with an aspiration to get a better future for the children. The government education space is overloaded. It is overwhelmed. There's no accountability. So parents don't feel comfortable having their kids' future in the hands of a system which is not accountable. So they move as soon as they get to a certain level of prosperity, they get out of poverty, they immediately move their kids to private schools. Now to talk a little bit about the scale of the problem, India's young population.
You know what? I'm going to just hold you there.
Yeah.
Before we get into the scale of the problem, I want you to just explain that education is, I think it's a concurrent subject.
Yes.
So when you say that budget private schools are somewhere in the middle of government and of private, private is too expensive, government is, let's just say, unreliable.
Hmm.
It's different in states. Some states actually do a good job.
Absolutely.
Like Delhi.
Yeah.
Right? So, but for the vast majority of children, and I believe the children demographic is quite large, there is just not enough state capacity or willingness to actually bring basic education for these children. Would I be right in saying
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. So Delhi is a shining example, and the work that they've done is just amazing. And we don't feel insecure about that at all. The scale, again, is so large that we need a lot of solutions. There's no one solution that is going to solve this problem. So as many solutions as possible are welcome.
Yeah.
And we hope that more and more states follow the Delhi example. Anyway, so to pick up on your point about the demographics, our young population, we've got 450 million, 45 crores of less than 19 years old population. So the young population of India is larger than the entire population of the US.
45 crores.
US, the entire population is 33 crores. Yeah. So we, and this is a unique moment in time, India has started aging up. So while it'll take several decades, but the population growth is slowing down, we'll probably never have this kind of a peak, 450 million kids. Now let's break down this number. One third, one third, one third. A third of these go to government schools. They cannot afford anything, so they get free education. And as you said, you'll have state governments and you'll have central government, municipal governments, everybody having, you know, some kind of a school. There are 12 lakh schools which are run by the government in the country, approximately, right? I'm talking about approximate numbers.
And that includes state, central, civic.
Yeah. Against that, a similar number, one third, say about 12 to 15 crores, go to private schools. Now, against 12 lakh government schools, there are only 4 lakh private schools, right? And a third of the population doesn't go to any school at all.
At all, yeah.
So even though the gross enrollment ratio at the primary level is close to 100%. So as a country, we've done a great job of making sure that every child who gets to an age of 3, 4, 5 gets into a school. But the number of kids who get into first year of college after grade 12 is about 27% only.
So there's a massive drop off.
There's a massive drop off, right? So if magically one day all of these kids were to get into a school, we don't have the infrastructure, right? And everybody wants English medium, everybody wants computer-based education. They're all looking to the best. It doesn't matter whether it's a government school or a private school. They want the best for their child. Education is so precious. And that is where it is such an important thing that the country cannot develop unless we have these kids, less than 19-year-old, get a good education. The other interesting fact is that every month, about 10 to 15 lakh young adults start looking for work. they enter the workforce, right? They do not have skills to do a good job. So that problem is huge at both levels, at the entry level as well as at the exit level.
It's just amazing. I mean, when you talk about the size of the problem, and there is a problem, I mean, yeah. we have to admit it, because when you spoke about the gross enrollment ratio being 100%, what that means is that India has done a fantastic job of putting them into a school.
Yeah.
But we can't say that forever.
Yeah.
We've got quantity. We don't have quality. Because if there was quality, you would have the massive drop-off.
Yeah.
Okay, folks. So I hope that you understand how important, you know, the problem is. Now let's get to budget private schools. A, what are they? Who runs them? And what is the problem that they face?
Yeah, absolutely. So the affordable private schools, as I said, these are small schools, mostly mom and pop setups. These are not chains of schools. These are individual enterprises. The way this works is a teacher who has put in, say, a decade of work, has built that reputation, has that following of the parents around, gets this idea or this inspiration to branch out and start a new school, right? So that is one stream of people who start a school. The other comes from the commercial angle, where they, in memory of some of their family members or with a desire to
give back,
or there could be some other reasons as well, they get into a school, but they have no background in academics. So these are the two broad ways in which people enter the school sector. Schools in India are necessarily required to be run as a trust or a society.
Can't do it for profit.
You cannot do it for profit, right? You cannot have a private limited school, a public limited school, a partnership or a sole proprietor. You have to have a trust or a society. So the way this works is that if I want to start a school, I will bring in my family members, my uncle, my mother, my wife, my brother, everybody, and we'll start a school. We would be the trustees or the members of the society, and off to the races, right? So that's the way it works. Now, this is all jugaad in real time. We can also discuss about the challenges that this structure faces, but yeah, that's the way I would want to define the sector right now.
Yeah, before I go into the challenges part, obviously the system is also twisted by a lot of people to, you know, to milk, set up ancillary services, and therefore, but I don't want to go into that because that will require another 10 episodes, believe me, the way that the budget private school sector is also twisted. We just want to stick to the genuine people out here who are running the school with a noble motive, you know, who are doing this because they are, like you said, mom and pop stores, and they're doing this because they actually want to educate kids, and they believe that, you know, like us, every kid should have access to quality education at, if not free, then at least at a reasonable cost, which brings me to the next question. What is the business model of these schools? You know, how do they operate realistically? Because obviously these are private schools which don't receive funding from the government. If they do, then, you know, let's not go into that because there are various models on that. But let's talk about a self-funded school started by a teacher, like you said. How does that school operate? And from there, if we can just get into these challenges, because our listeners, you know, if you're in any of the major cities, you would have seen a lot of protests over school fees and stuff like that. Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's go into this.
Sure. So as you mentioned, none of these schools get any support from the government. There is a model which is called the aided school. We'll not talk about that. These are 100% privately operated schools.
That's
which
right.
do not get any support from the government. Their only revenue model is to collect fees from the parents. In some states, there is a certain restriction in terms of what you can charge a parent or not. Those are reviewed and revised every few years and all that. But today, you just have the parents paying the fees. Now, the fees could be tuition fee, transportation fees, all other structures, but that's the way it works. The expenditure mostly is towards the salaries of teachers and the non-teaching staff. What we've seen is that most of these schools do not run on rented property. They have their own property. Either it is ancestral or they've purchased it over time, but they don't have rent. Otherwise, rent is also a component. So then that's the way the economics work. As long as you are collecting enough fees that takes care of your expenditure, you will end up with a reasonable amount of surplus. Now, if you look at the school owner's profile, that fellow has a certain equity in the market, in the surroundings. He's got a certain dignity that he has to preserve. He's got some kind of stature. For him, it's going to be very bad if he messes around with it. Parents are going to pull away the kids immediately. Nobody wants to take a risk that way. So here you have a customer who's got a decent cash flow. Again, if a kid gets into grade 1 and is going to graduate in grade 10, you have almost 10 years of constant revenue. The stickiness is immense, right? Nobody would want to pull out a kid unless there's a problem. So you get a consistent cash flow. If you keep your expenses under control, unfortunately, teachers are the one who get the worst equation in this deal, is that they are paid very, very less, right? And then you get the same kind of quality as well. So that's the way it works, that you have revenue, you have expenses, mainly teacher salaries, and then you get a surplus. Through that surplus, you can pay installments, and that's the way we also assess them.
Okay. Now, in the 10 years that you've existed, how did COVID change things and got a lot of stuff to a crisis?
Oh, my God.
I can see by your reaction that I've touched a raw nerve or something.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, you know, when we have investors, they would ask us what can go wrong. And we did a lot of thinking about this and we came to the conclusion that schools are recession-proof. We saw that schools are demon-proof. We saw that they are GST-proof. They're proof everything except pandemic. And pandemic, there's no proof at all, right? So what happened was that the day the lockdown was announced, right, all the schools were forced to shut down. Everybody was given a mass promotion.
Wow.
And from that day, they did not have the wherewithal to take care of any expenses, including paying our installments. Teachers were said that you are going to be on indefinite leave. Very few people actually paid the teachers. Teachers were not paid at all. Rent, if at all, was again put in abeyance. What did not stop was the meter of the loan. Our installments kept on getting due. 85% of our customers availed the first moratorium, the first 3 months. But then second time when they got to know that this is not a forbearance, this is where the dues are going to be capitalized, there's no escape. Most of them started paying back little by little. But then, you know, kind of supporting them. And the biggest problem was that, you know, there was a window where schools would open, then shut down again, open, shut down again. Delta was huge, and then Omicron. So it's been only a little over a year that we've had consistent classes. Till then, there was a huge amount of volatility. And parents in that profile do not want to pay for stuff that they don't get, right? So they all moved their kids to government schools, they went back and all that. So the impact was brutal. We're still reeling under that impact. Our delinquencies are significantly high right now. There's a high provisioning that we're carrying, but we're trying to rehabilitate them. The good thing is that they're coming back very strongly and we hope to be out of this issue very, very soon.
Yeah, I mean, that's good to hear, right? Because these are kids you're talking about. This education you're talking about. This is not a scooter loan or a car loan or something. Rajesh, what's the future from here? You know, when do you think that this, your books will say go back to normal? And how do you think budget private schools are going to perform long term? Because, you know, I really don't know where this is going. You have the NEP, the National Education Policy 2020, which talks about a lot of things. But education is very complicated that way. What's your outlook on the future now?
Yeah. So there were some people who got carried away by the online trends that we saw during COVID. The post-COVID bounce back has made it very clear that the schools are not going anywhere. One, education, that is okay. Second thing is that people don't realize that this is a babysitting program till the kid turns 18, right? Parents also have a life. Who wants to have the kids in their hair all day long, right? Mm-hmm. You want the kids to go out, interact with their peers, build those social networks. So schools are not going anywhere. At best, what we've seen is that there is more openness to looking at tech solutions, digital solutions. So there are a lot of schools that are going to be really investing in training the teachers to be able to move in a hybrid model. But again, since the last 1 year, there's not been any lockdown. So it's back to chalk and talk. So that way, the schools are going to remain. Now, the future of the country is linked to the future of these schools as well. So, you know, I would want to kind of go out on a limb and make some points here, is that we should recognize private schools as almost like a systemically important entity, right? This is, you know, a phrase which is very common in banking, where, you know, whether you're systemically important or not. We cannot work unless we give the proper respect and recognition which is due to these schools. As of now, they are looked as a pariah by the government, right? They look at them as an irritant, an unnecessary irritant. They look at them as competition. Now, we know that the government cannot and should not get into these things. There are people who are willing to do it and parents are willing to pay, right? So I think there should be more freedom and flexibility that should be given to schools. The problems with these schools are that they're not able to give any good quality of education in a consistent manner. There's a huge amount of variance all across, right? So it's not that they're providing much better quality, but they need better teachers. They need better ways of managing the school. They need a lot of capital. Today, they have access to philanthropic capital. They have access to the moneylender. And over the last 10 years, they have companies like ours, and there are many others who are also lending to them. But there is no option option to bring in equity, right? Now, all of these things will happen only when you allow these schools to be run in a for-profit manner. The other advantage is that the moment you run a for-profit enterprise, you will have to make sure that you comply with the laws. There'll be higher transparency. If you're a company, you will have to be registered with the Registrar of Companies, and they have done a fantastic job. The way in which we have to report this stuff and all that, there's so much of transparency, there's so much of accountability. It is going to benefit all the stakeholders, right? And so there are multiple benefits which are there on the side as well. And the best thing is that you will be able to bring in talent, because you'll be able to bring in a lot of capital as well. So that, I would say, you know, if you talk about the future of the country, the future of the schooling system, it's time to shake things a little bit. Yeah, we can understand the trust in society. There's a historical reason for that. But should that be the only model which works? I'm not so sure. That said, it's a pipe dream. There are a lot of stakeholders who would not be interested. The public at large. Parents wouldn't mind, but the public, oh, there's going to be outrage. Odi Baba, private school, for-profit school, kaise chale? Politicians, governments. So there is going to be a lot of concession building that is going to be required. But yeah, that can totally change the game.
I'm amazed, right? Because the government doesn't have the capacity to do this, for sure. I mean, I think that has been proven. Delhi is an outlier.
Yeah.
The South has done amazing progress. You know, states like Kerala, which is fine. But most large parts of India have not been able to crack this. Those that have, they are limited to either a civic authority or a state which is doing it. And like you said, that once you say education for profit, there'll be, I mean, you know, trigger warning for people who are listening to this, because education and profit do not go together.
Yeah,
but well, I don't know, you know, this is a topic on which you can go on and on. Some point of time, something has to give, because, you know, this is a very big problem that's facing us. You speak to any CEO out there and he'll tell you that talent is a problem, you know, and at the junior level. And like you said, if you have such a big drop off and you don't have upskilling, and Manish Sabharwal likes to talk about apprenticeship, even that's not happening at scale, you know. So I really don't know where we're going with this. Anyway, folks, as you can see, I kind of get a little bit worked up when I talk about this, but it is a serious problem, right, Brijesh?
A huge problem.
And let's
very
hope
large
that,
scale.
Yeah, let's just hope that there is some solution. But we're going to take a break right now at this point of time. On the other side, we're going to talk about the exact product, what Vartana does, how they run a loan, and a whole lot of that right after the small break. And welcome back. Brijesh, let's talk about Vartana now. What's your product? In the sense that if I have a listener out there who's listening to this, let's say that he wants to set up a budget private school, affordable education, and he comes up to you, how does the process start? What do you offer? How does it work?
Yeah, so we don't provide loans to greenfield projects. We provide loans to schools which are already in existence for at least 3 years, because stability of operations is very important. And then if they have any expansion plans. So suppose you have a listener who's already running a school and wants money for expansion. Now that expansion could be adding a new floor, adding a few classrooms, adding a specific activity related thing, purchasing a playground, or building a new school for a new branch. Any of these things. Typically, what we do is that we have a large team of relationship managers who are on our rolls. They are out in the market searching. But to make it easy, we have multiple channels. You can reach out to us through social media, on our website, whatever. Let us know that you're interested. Somebody will reach out to you. The way this works is that our relationship manager will sit with you, understand your school, basic details like how many students you have, fee levels, etc. They'll fill up an application form, pick up your KYC documents, banking, etc., and take that to the branch. Now, the branch, we have only 35 branches, but we are in about 150, 160 locations. So it's a hub and spoke model. So the nearest branch will service your application. And the first thing that we'll do is we'll do a bureau check, and we'll see whether the past credit history is good or not. And then our credit underwriter, our credit manager, will actually go to the school and sit down with the school owner to understand about the past and the future plans for the school. We will also look at the cash flows, the fee receipts, ledgers, how many students you have, how much is your collection efficiency, all of these things, and we'll build a cash flow model to understand whether you can service the installment or not. We'll also look at what is the project for, how is it going to benefit the children and the school, whether it is going to improve the quality or increase access or both. Right. And then based on that, there's going to be a recommendation and an approval, and then you'll get an approval. We also give these loans against a security, right? These loans are secured loans. So you will also have to give us the property papers, photocopy of the property papers to see whether the property actually belongs to you and what's the value of that property. So when all of these things are done, then you get to the approval stage. Once you have the approval, then there's a security creation where our charge is created on the property and then we disperse. Now, if it's most of the money that we let out is towards construction. So it's very easy to kind of disburse in tranches so that you don't have to take the additional load of money which you're not using. So when we see the, and it also helps us because the end use is being monitored. So when we see that, okay, it's come to a certain level of construction, then we release a second tranche and the third tranche as the case may be. And then you start your installments.
So then it works like a normal loan.
Then it works like a normal.
So if I've got this right, and you did mention this, that typically budget private schools have their own land. So, I mean, going by what you said, then if I have taken something on rent, then I wouldn't be able to.
It becomes complicated.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what are the lengths of the loans and some comparative interest rates just for our listeners to get an idea?
So we go all the way up to 10 years. We had started with 5 years, but then we kept on increasing. It's helpful to the school owner to have the installment at a lower rate of at a lower amount. But the behavior that we've seen is that people don't carry those loans for that long. They would want to close it sooner, or they might come back for a second project or a third project. Interest rate again then depends on the customer profile. The higher risk customers will get a higher pricing. So our pricing ranges from 16% to about 19 to 20% for the secured loan. For unsecured loan, it's slightly higher. It would be about 25% to 27%.
Okay.
Now, these are in reducing balance rates. So when a normal customer who understands flat rate, roughly you can divide that by two. So you know, it'd be in the range of about 10 to 12%.
Yeah, I'm just, your cost of funds must be really high, because if you're doing this at that higher price, yeah, you know, for the person who's taking a loan, this does become a bit of a burden, so to say, you know, on the balance sheet.
Well, yes. So one, the cost of funds, the profile of the customers, the fact that it is an underbanked segment, all of these add up. But as you've seen, microfinance loans work at much higher rates. So the beauty here is that if the money is used properly for the school, I can assure you that the surplus margins at a school level are significantly higher. So by not taking a loan, there's an opportunity cost which is being borne by the school owner.
Yeah.
Our cost, our interest rate is still a small component of what he would end up earning as a surplus if he were to give education to more kids, take a loan, build that infra and give that education to those 30, 40, 50, 100 kids more.
Yeah.
Rather than saving for the next 5 years, fighting against inflation, having a discipline to save and then construct, right? That doesn't work.
Yeah. So when you build, I mean, if he's building a school at scale, then the economics will eventually work in his favor once he reaches a certain base amount of kids, because yours is a fixed cost.
Yeah.
Whereas his is, you know, dependent on the children. So you also offer a lot more, you know, more than a loan, because I've seen on your website, you have an entire infrastructure that you offer to your, you know, to the school. Talk about that for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idealist in us, like, we wanted to look at this problem at a slightly different level. We also acknowledge the fact that giving a loan is one of the most undifferentiated products. So there was an urgent need to differentiate ourselves, but at the same time also add value. So we are the only people who have something like this. We have this thing called Beyond Loans. Like, loan ke aage kya? What else can we do with the school instead of just giving a loan? So we have a team of people who specialize only in education. They interact with the schools at a very different level. Some of the basic things that we do is we introduce them to solution providers who can bring in products and solutions which can take the school to the next level. Now, that could be either on the platform of teaching and learning, or it could be about school management, ERP solutions, etc. There are a lot of products. There's a huge amount of innovation which is happening. Other things could be hardware, smart hardware, so interactive smart boards and all that, which are the bright, shiny objects that schools also like, parents also like. So there's a demand for that as well. So there are a lot of these companies who would want to join hands with us because we have a strong distribution. They need not invest in their distribution. So that is one thing. We used to run something called a school transformation program, where we would go into a school who's our customer. we'll do a baseline test of the kids on certain subjects and give them a diagnostic that this is where your kids are as compared to a universal database. Are they at par? Are they one grade below or what? Right? And then there's a challenge. For the next 1 year, let us try to improve the learning outcomes by just 5%, 10%, right? And if you hit those goals, then you actually get a monetary reward, which can be looked at as a reduction in your rate of interest because your quality improved, right? So we have run those kinds of programs. During COVID, we saw that there was a huge learning gap after 2 years. So we ran a program which we called Unlock Schools program, where we gave them written material, which was a bridge material, so that they could refresh, brush up their past knowledge, and at least be ready to get into class now rather than just like, oh my God, what is this? So that was a big success that was appreciated a lot. In addition to that, we do regular webinars and write a lot of relevant material on social media to help the schools.
Sure. Brijesh, how do you run your business? I want to talk about that for a while because, you know, this is a for-profit thing. You're not doing this as a, you know, charity or philanthropy for anyone. You're obviously running this as a business for profit and you are a registered NBFC. By any chance, does PSL priority sector lending apply here or doesn't?
No, it doesn't apply to...
So no benefits from anybody?
No.
Okay. Tell us about that. I mean, how do you, you know, raise your funds, lend, NPAs, etc., etc., etc.?
So 10 years back, nobody would be willing to lend to a school. We're not the first, we're not the only one, we're not even the biggest, but we've been there, tab se lage hue hain. And what I can say with a lot of satisfaction is that to build this as an asset class was not easy. We had to really struggle in the initial years to get loans from banks and finance companies, right? So that first point of satisfaction is that, yeah, we were able to build an asset class. Today, we've had relationships with over 35 lenders in India and abroad. So, and we've paid every rupee back on time. And so that has given a lot of confidence to the lenders. We've raised equity multiple times. We've given decent exits to our initial investors as well, right? On the other side, we have also done deals which are asset reconstruction deals, ARC transactions, where you sell an NPA. So that actually completes the full cycle, which establishes school loans as a legitimate asset class, right? So that gives us a lot of satisfaction. So the way this works is, and again, as far as the profitability and all is concerned, we've been profitable from the second year onwards, all the years except for the first year after COVID. And last year, we were again marginally profitable. This year, again, we'll just scrape through. The reason for that is that we are carrying a huge amount of provisioning as an insurance policy against the bad debts. It's taking time for us to recover those things. So today, again, the RBI, the arbitrage between a bank and a finance company is reducing. So the recognition norms for NPAs are getting more and more stringent and all. So then you have to carry a lot of provisioning. But what we've seen is a very encouraging trend that schools are coming back on track and they're trying their level best. They don't have money to pay all the overdue installments, but they're paying every month, right? So NPA management is a very, very active function within the organization. So we've got a collections team and a legal team. And the collections process doesn't start at the NPA stage. It starts even before the due date. So this is an unbanked sector. So we have to start calling them to remind them, sir, next week your installment is coming due. Please make sure that there's money in the bank. From there, all the way to follow-up, physical visits, and then litigation if required. But it's our fiduciary responsibility to collect the money. This is the money which has been entrusted to us. So it's our responsibility to collect. So all the options which are available under law, we will explore all those options, but we will make sure that the money comes back. Right? What we've also seen is that the portfolio that we are building post-COVID is performing very well. So that stress is not there. And the selection is also good. So if I look back at what are the things that are helping us, you know, grow. One would be robust collections. And second is that our credit underwriting processes are getting better and better with every cycle.
Yeah. So, you mentioned you are not the largest. Who's the largest?
Well,
it's a very specialized field, right? I was just wondering, you've said that. So are there other people who do this at scale?
Yeah. So see, I don't know the exact numbers because they are not published. I would still want to believe that we are the largest, if not the largest, but there are a lot of players now who have been here before us. So Indian School Finance Company was the first one. We've got Shiksha Finance, we've got Avans, we've got Perfectus, Clicks. There's a whole host of companies who lend.
Sure.
And that's good because the school owner gets to benefit. But yeah, so...
Future plans? What lies ahead?
Yeah. So One is that we want to get back on track. Last 2 years, 3 years have been kind of very interesting, but there's going to be a lot of growth. We are very excited about the student loans business. So these are the two things that we will be doubling down on. People ask us whether we want to diversify into other sectors or not. We feel that focus is something that should not be defocused from. It's good to be working in one sector. The sector itself has got very strong fundamentals. So we don't feel defensive about being in this sector. There's a huge potential here. It's good for the nation. So we will keep focus on this.
Yeah, and I wish you all the best for that.
Thank you.
Prayesh, my standard question to all our guests, any recommendations, any content or any book that you're reading or anything that you're watching, seeing that you can share with the listeners?
Yeah. So I've recently come across a podcast series called The Founders Podcast by David Sinra. This is an amazing guy who dives deep into biographies and autobiographies of founders, mainly in the US context, and does a great job of reviewing those things and telling the stories. Very well researched. That's very good. As far as books are concerned, there's one book which I would say kind of changed my life, which in the sense that it gave me the courage to become entrepreneur as compared to being a salaried person, would be Black Swan. Wow. By Nassim Taleb.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I mention it. The book that I'm currently reading is another fantastic book, a very old book, Roots by Alex Haley.
Oh my, wow.
Yeah, it's an amazing fictionalized history of the black people. It's very, very good. It goes back to the roots in Africa.
Yeah.
So it's been a fantastic read. A movie that I really enjoyed that kind of completely shook me, took me by surprise, was the Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh my, wow. Okay. your range is amazing. I mean, we've gone from a Founders podcast to Roots and now Banshees was, it was kind of just shakes you up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it hits you with an intensity that you don't expect.
You don't expect that, right? So and so beautifully shot.
Very brutal also.
Yeah.
Wow. So you gave us a podcast, you gave us a book, and you gave us a movie. Anything else?
Nah, this is
thank you. Thank you. Oh, boy. You don't get that very often, do we, folks? You know, three recommendations and all pretty good ones because, you know, Roots is something that I studied in school or college. I don't know. And it stays with you. Roots doesn't, you know, it's the kind of stuff that that you don't forget for a long time. I haven't heard the Founders podcast, but I'm pretty sure it's good. And of course, Banshees of Inisherin. I think it won a few Oscars also. So if you haven't, then please check that out. But wow, okay, that is a wrap on this episode of Paisa Paisa. My guest, Rajesh Mishra, co-founder and COO of Varthana. Folks, it's a great place to work for, right?
Yeah.
And if, you know, just check out the website, VARTHANA. If you or any of your friends or family, you know, is looking to work in the education sector, check out the website. Only if you is running a private school, check out the website. If you're interested in education, which you should be, by the way, you know, make sure that you send this episode to as many people that you know. But yeah, Rajesh, thank you so much for doing this for our listeners, are coming all the way from Bangalore to Bombay for us.
Thank you so much. Pleasure is mine.
And folks, that is a wrap on this episode. If you like this podcast, please do become a Club Paisa Paisa subscriber. You get full archive access, early access to episodes, ad-free experience, and bonus content in the form of my takes on each and every episode, ₹699 per year introductory offer. And you can check out other interesting podcasts on IVM Network. You can listen to us on the IVM Podcast app or ivmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. You can reach out to me. I'm your host, Anupam Gupta, BVP on Twitter. And thank you so much, folks. Thank you so much for listening to Paisa Paisa, especially episodes like this. Thank you.
No material on the show should be considered as financial advice. The material on the show is for informational purposes only. Please consult a financial advisor before taking any investment decision.